Welcome to Your Ink Story, a podcast exploring what humans have in common through the stories behind the body art folks wear. I'm your host, Andy Lyons, and I hope these ink-spirational short stories, sharing the heart behind tattoos, fascinate you and leave you feeling more meaningfully connected to humanity. This is Season 1, Episode 26, and our guest, Andrew Degar, shares fascinating ink stories from his full body tattoos. As a doctor in pharmaceutical sciences, Andrew's stories weave between professional discretion and personal expression, as his tattoos remain coverable, allowing him to navigate healthcare systems without conflict. From vibrant pandas and beautiful wetlands to the symbolic depth of an Egyptian plague and Byzantine designs, Andrew's tattoos seamlessly blend dark and light themes, mirroring the dualities of life. Welcome to Your Ink Story, Andrew. I'm so delighted you're here to share your ink story with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Andrew, please let folks know where you're from and how you glow in the world before we get started talking about tattoos.
Sure. So I currently reside in Houston, Texas. My glow in the world is two aspects. I'm a doctor in pharmaceutical sciences, and I work in genomics and genetic testings. And then also I'm the founder of a nonprofit called Third Ward Jiu-Jitsu, where we promote community self-defense here in Houston, Texas, with large impact within the LGBTQ community of Texas.
Oh, thank you for that important work. First of all, you are a smarty pants, clearly, but also the fact that you're helping the community, the LGBTQ community, with a safe space to stay strong, stay connected through Third Ward. I'll have links in the show notes, listeners, for this, but I just want to tell you, folks, I learned about Andrew via a favorite platform that I highly recommend everyone follow, which is called Queerency, and it spotlights LGBTQ plus business moves and money moves, and I'll have the links for that in the show notes as well. But the founder and CEO is Travers Johnson, and he was sharing Andrew's amazing work in the world at Third Ward, including his moves and grooves with the jiu-jitsu, and I saw the video, and Andrew's rolling around on the floor doing his thing, and I'm like, wowza, I love these tattoos I'm seeing. So I reached out to Travers and said, hey, please make an intro, please. And he kindly did. So that's a little side story, listeners, and how I met Andrew. And so, Andrew, I'm so grateful that you're here to share your tattoo stories, because you have full sleeves on legs and arms and your chest going on. So we've got a lot to talk about. But first, please share your tattoo origin story. What originally inspired you to wear body art?
Yeah, so I grew up in South Carolina. And when I was a child, I remember the school, my brother's elementary school, the sextant there was an old sailor, and he had a bunch of tattoos. And I remember as a, you know, 3-4 year old thinking how cool it was and how intrigued I was over his artwork. And tattooing was illegal in South Carolina until I believe 2006. So there wasn't a lot of heavily tattooed people in the area, because we'd all have to travel to North Carolina, Georgia, to be able to get tattoos. So it really was just something that stood out to me as a child. And I just always appreciated the artwork, and not being artistic myself, it was a way for me to appreciate art in another form.
How wonderful. I know, I'm always surprised as I hear these stories, because I'm a tattoo curious and I don't have any tattoos to tell of my own, but I've always been curious about the designs and the art people put on their bodies. And I've been asking folks to tell me your ink story for decades, but I didn't know this illegal business in all these states. So I knew here in Massachusetts and New York, it was in 1995, 1996, and 1997, right before it became legal here. But South Carolina, 2006, they were really holding out.
Yeah, yeah. And even now, there's so many laws and regulations about it where it's very difficult to still open up a shop there. Like, you can't be within like X amount of feet of a school, of a bar. There's all these regulations that came through, which I can appreciate some regulations when it comes to the health and safety of tattooing and like knowing your bloodborne pathogen classes and whatnot. But when it's like, oh, you can't be within 10,000 feet of a park, it's like, well, where are we going to put a shop? Like, no, nowhere it's going to work.
Yeah, not in beautiful South Carolina.
Exactly.
So when you got that first tattoo, what was that like? How old were you? Talk about the design and the experience.
Sure. So my first tattoos were these pandas I have on the backs of my calves. They were put on in Wilmington, North Carolina. Friends of a friend was the tattooer. I believe his name was Sean Beck. I don't know if he still tattoos anymore. I heard he didn't, but he was
okay. But thank you for that shout out. That's
all. Oh yeah. If he's still tattooing, he was great, you know, 20 some odd years ago. But he was interesting because he had no tattoos himself, but was this amazing tattooer. And this was back before social media, before the internet was this accessible. And I had a phone number and I called and we talked and I was like, here's the sides, here's how they're gonna look, here's my thoughts. And I showed up. He took a pen and literally drew them on my skin and made it fit to my body. And then we tattooed both my calves and it was not the best experience because it was painful and it was a long day. I think I sat for like 6 or 7 hours. It was
just, you got them all done at once.
All taken out one shot. So,
okay. Well, first of all, we have to know, and I say we, cause I always speak on behalf of those tuning in. Why pandas and why the back of your calves?
So my original idea, so I'm as a scientist, I really appreciated wildlife conservation. And one of my goals when I was 18 was to work in some of the panda rehab centers. And that was always my favorite animal growing up. And so I got pandas for that. Backs of the calves, I don't really know why I placed them there. It was just, it seemed like a cool spot. It seemed like something that'd be fun to have. And yeah, so I went back to the calves.
Oh my gosh. And so of course there was no numbing cream and you were 18?
Yes.
Andrew, that is amazing. And family members, anybody who was watching out for you, were they like, oh, you go, Andrew? Or like, what are you doing, Andrew?
Family wasn't keen on it. I went by myself. I can't remember how long of a drive it was, but it was probably at least like 3 to 4 hour drive to get up to that area from where I lived at the time. And yeah, my family knew I loved the work and always wanted it. I talked about it a lot, but they were never keen on me getting heavily tattooed, which yeah. Now I am, but yeah. You know, that was the start at 18.
Well, and of course, parents get the memo, right? Tattoos are going to make your life even harder. Yeah, they're going to keep doors closed. People are going to filter you out because you have a tattoo.
Yeah.
I believe that's changing, but I think parents want to protect the kids and want their lives to be as accessible as possible. And
oh, yeah.
And so
I think that I was always trying to make my tattoos coverable. I'm a PhD. I work in healthcare systems a lot. And when I was getting my first sleeve done, I put on a long sleeve button down shirt and stretched out my arm and then made a line where the shirt sleeve stopped. And that's where we started tattooing. So that way I could still cover up my tattoos, but still look in this professional setting.
And still feel like you were able to tap into your individuality and your full expression with yeah. art on your body. And listeners, we'll have photos of Andrew's art, but his is very colorful art as well. But Andrew, what is it about the panda? There are a lot of beautiful animals in the world and birds and reptiles. What was it about the panda that sort of spoke to you and your heart?
I think what started was, is as a child, you always get that first teddy bear. And my first teddy bear was a panda. And yeah, it was just one of those things where I was just introduced to them at such a young age and it just became my childhood favorite animal.
Wow. Okay, listeners, we love hearing from you. So be sure to pop a comment, whether it's the show notes or on Instagram at Tell Me Your Ink Story. That's where we have our best conversations about the ink. What your thoughts are about animal tattoos, you know, hashtag pet tattoos, hashtag wildlife tattoos. Do you have any? We want to know. And we want to know if you have any questions for Andrew as well. And so now you started to build out your body. You've got the calves done. I'm assuming you started to spend a lot of time getting educated in academia, yes?
Yes.
And was it consistent year after year? You know, got your undergrad, your master's, and then your PhD?
I did my undergrad and master's back to back, and then I took a long break. I worked in academia for a bit. I worked at the University of South Carolina for a while, and then I went back for my PhD. I think I was, it took a long break, like 6 or 7 years before I went back for my PhD. So I had a break in there.
Okay. And so when did you start adding? Was it right away, adding designs on your body, building out the sleeves, or did you wait a few years and think about it more? And like, I don't know if I want to go back in the chair that soon because it hurt.
Yeah, I think when I was younger, I was kind of doing a one tattoo a year sort of thing, saving up for it and then getting one piece. And actually, I should have thought about this a little more, what my order of operations was. But I think I got a chest piece when I was 19, mm-hmm. a traditional like heart with a saber through it with some banners and script. So it was
and a
15-year-old heartbreak tattoo.
Those are so wonderful. I may have to do a post on heartbreak tattoos.
Yeah. I think they're important to live through the emotions and have memories of the good and the bad.
That's right. Someone, I think it was Dylan, folks, I'm thinking he was episode maybe 17, and he was talking about Lily, broken heart on his ankle. There we go. And he thought about covering that up. He said, no, that was an important thing in my life. And so then did you wait a little while? I know you said once a year you were saving up your money. How did you get an inspiration for your designs and where you wanted to go? I understand the heartbreak, but what came next?
Well, when tattooing became legal in South Carolina, a good friend of mine had opened up one of the first shops. I was living in Columbia, South Carolina. Her name is Shannon Purvis. She's still tattooing now. I believe her shop is called Ophidian Tattoo. It's still in Columbia, South Carolina. And we were close friends. I started spending a lot of time just hanging out at the shop, meeting other tattooers, and just kind of saying, hey, that'd be cool. Or, hey, that'd be cool. And so it didn't get to a point where I was getting, let's say, meaningful tattoos, but just designs that I appreciated.
And so, were they more tribal? Were they more artistic and flowing and with characters? Or were they
heavily influenced by American traditional tattooing and then Japanese style tattooing?
So let's talk about that. What is American tattoo versus Japanese style?
Yeah, so I think American tattooing really thinks about the old Navy style, the sailor types. People may throw around names like Sailor Jerry, Captain Coleman, any of these old school design tattooers. They're timeless designs to where you see people will evolve these designs to even, I want to say modern, but like even 20, 30 years ago with different tattooers would take similar designs, improve on them with technology or just artistic ability. But I think that's heavily influenced by what we saw, you know, way before I was alive.
Absolutely. And on episode 2, listeners, Rob, who's a marine construction person, his father took him at the age of 16 to get his first tattoo, and it was a Sailor Jerry tattoo, mm-hmm. very American tattoo. And then Japanese style is...
So I don't know a lot of the history of this, but I do know that their style is very unique to be, instead of more placement of singular, like sticker type tattoos, they have a more organic flow to it. And that's what you'll see a lot of sleeves, and they'll have more mythological aspects to it, like dragons or, you know, they have many different creatures or demon types in them, like a Baku or Suni, all these different animals that are within Japanese lore.
See, and I think that must tie into your martial arts. When did you become a martial arts expert? When did that start being important to you?
During my master's, the person I was doing my research under ran the judo club at my university. So I started doing judo. I'm a smaller framed person, and I was with a lot of larger bodied people. So I was getting tossed around a lot, but I was doing really well in the grappling. And so my PI at the time told me, hey, you should try jiu-jitsu. And this was in 2008, 2009. And I found the only Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym that was open in the city I was living in. And I fell in love really quickly. And so I've been doing jiu-jitsu since 2009, I want to say.
Wow, it's a powerful form.
It is.
I call it martial arts. It may be, given it's Brazilian, jiu-jitsu. Talk just a little bit about how it's strengthened and how your body and how you felt stronger and probably even safer.
Yeah. So Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is really focused on grappling and different types of fulcrums. The more physics side of it is not a lot of punching and kicking or anything like that, but it's how to throw a person, use joint manipulation, chokes, that sort of thing. Like an evolved form of judo.
Yeah.
And being smaller, learning how to use my frames as a body or use other people's force against them just really is empowering to where I can train with people 100 pounds heavier than me and I feel safe and confident in my own technique because that's how the sport was built.
And that's important, especially for women who are traditionally not usually as strong as men. It's important to understand you can have a powerful and empowering body through this type of, I would call it exercise for me because I'm never going to get into a grappling moment. But a form of self-defense, right?
Yes, exactly. And where we at Third World Jiu-Jitsu try to provide community self-defense. We want to focus on empowering our own people within our community. We're not a heavy competition gym. We're not going out there trying to be the next big fighter in a scene or an MMA or anything. We just want to empower our own people.
Right. So that when they walk down the street, should they be targeted?
They can get out of a situation, hopefully unscathed.
Right. And, you know, ideally you want to walk away from any form of aggression, listeners, right, Andrew? But if you can't, and it becomes a life-saving thing and you need to shut something down, you have the confidence that you can do that, which just gives a whole nother level of peace of mind.
Absolutely. And where we try to teach de-escalation as a first form of self-defense, and then we show escalating depending on how bad the situation goes. So we try to show different steps. You know, even at the video that Trav posted for us on queerency, the idea is, hey, here's if someone like a friend is crossing a boundary with you, or hey, something it could be going way out of line with a person you may or may not know, or you're being attacked and this is a life-saving moment.
Right.
So we try to build up that type of strength in people.
I love this work that you're doing at Third Ward. It is so important. Let's talk a little bit more about your leg sleeves. And also, you have a lot of color in your tattoos. Talk about the colors that you have brought to life and why color was important to you.
Sure. So my upper body is very colorful. Both my full sleeves are full of different colors. My right sleeve is the Egyptian plagues. It was done by my friend Zach Spurlock in Savannah, Georgia. He had done some of my other tattoos, and he was actually tattooing my shins. I had big Byzantine style archangels on my shins. And I grew up in the Catholic Church. I'm not a believer, but I was just exposed to a lot of this type of religious art. I really enjoyed the Byzantine art. So we did the archangels. And when talking to him about it, I was like, hey, how about Egyptian plague sleeve? And he like stopped mid-tattoo. He was like, I've been dreaming about this sleeve. When can we start?
Can I get clarification? Is that Egyptian plague?
Yes. So river of blood, frogs, locusts, boils, darkness, hailstorm, death of the firstborn. It's grim. It's a pretty grim tattoo. There's a ripped up goat. There's a dead baby. It's
oh
dark.
Oh my gosh. And he'd been thinking about it. He's like, oh my gosh, thank you for giving me your landscape to work on this.
I think we finished my shins. It was a couple sessions to do my shins because they're my entire lower leg. And then we went directly into the sleeve within a few weeks. So we were ready for it.
And how do people respond? Because it's very graphic.
Zach is an amazing tattooer. I mean, my sleeve is, I believe, almost 15 years old now, and he is only even better. I'm like wishing I could go get a huge new sleeve from him now. But the great things he did is he hid some of the very dark pieces. So like the dead goat is on the inside of my forearm. So resting, you don't see it. The dead baby is tucked nicely into here. So again, it's like when my arm is down, you don't really see it. So he designed it to still have this grimness and darkness to it, but wouldn't just be having a dead baby on the center of my forearm.
Right. And that period of time, the Egyptian plague, is that because sometimes you just get hit with so much harshness in life that it's just part of getting up every day and being able to navigate those dark waters?
Yeah, it was more, I thought I wanted something kind of grim and something a little out there as a sleeve. And I had the idea that this could be something really dark.
And it's beautiful. And the colors are really remarkable. Right?
Yeah. And even at 15 years old, I see it and people are shocked to know how old of a sleeve it is.
Understandable. And there's always this talk and banter, listeners, on TikTok and Instagram about, oh, you're getting color. Let's see how long that lasts. Well, guess what? It can last.
Yeah. And
it's amazing. It's, and of course, I'm always wondering, because you're such a light and wonderful person. I'm like, what are you doing with all that dark tat on your theme on your body?
I've nicely balanced it out. So my left sleeve is a wetland, because I grew up in South Carolina near the swamps. And so I did a wetland that was a lot of species from that area that I grew up. And like the colors are very balancing to it, to where I have a lot of blacks and reds. I did a lot of blues and greens on my other arm, so that way it could nicely balance out between the two darknesses of them. And I waited almost 15 years. I finished my left arm earlier this year, actually in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A tattooer named Jason Wallstrom, I hope that's how you pronounce his name, but Jason owns this shop called Seawolf Tattoo in Minneapolis. And I met him getting tattooed by someone else there. We talked about living in the South, because he lived in the South briefly. I told him my idea and he was like, I would love to do that. When can we start?
Oh, gives me goosebumps. No, having an aligned tattoo artist is really important. It's an intimate experience, and you've done an outstanding job. So wait a minute, now you're in Minneapolis, but you're in Texas. Like, how did you get in Minneapolis?
So during the pandemic, my background has a lot of experience in PCR, which is now a technique everyone knows very well since of COVID. And I moved to Minneapolis. I was consulting for a company to help move and build a lab up there to do COVID sequencing and tracking and that sort of thing. So I ended up in Minneapolis briefly. As a Southerner, the winters were too rough, so I came back to Texas as soon as I could. But I spent some time in Minneapolis.
Well, I'm glad you had that experience of what it's like when the thermometer dips below 30 degrees and goes minus 20 and 30.
Yeah, the coldest I felt was about minus 30. And before Minneapolis, the most northern area I had lived was Atlanta. So this was a drastic change for me.
So as you look forward, because you just finished up this most recent sleeve, so you might be thinking, I'm taking a break from this, but mentioned in separately with me that you have a back that's outlined. What's going on with your next tattoo?
Oh, yeah. So I started my back when I was 18 or 19, I did a full outline and have just ignored it. And it's to a point now where I'd like to do something completely different. I have my family crest and some banners, but I got it done and I just never touched it again. So my idea will be to do some light lasering and then do a huge cover up for it.
Oh, nice. Nice. And I have seen, and listeners, in many of the episodes here, we've talked about cover ups and what's needed and necessary when you're doing a cover up and how important that is. So good luck with that. Oh,
especially
my
the lasering.
Everybody says, well, we have some wonderful new products out. I'm a huge fan of Painless Picasso, which is wonderful numbing cream, and it really helps with the lasering, and it doesn't have lidocaine in it, so you don't have to worry about something going into your system that's going to harm you, and you know about all of that, so you know that you want to stay away from that kind of cream on your body. But yeah, getting the laser part will be much more challenging.
Yeah, I've had lasering a bit. I've had a few sessions and it's rough. It's way worse than the actual tattooing. Goes by so much faster, but you get all the pain just punched into one really painful section.
Oh my gosh. And so what didn't we touch on that you love? One of your art pieces on your body. Are you your sleeves and your legs going down to your ankles?
Yeah. So my legs are a lot of, I like to say, sticker tattoos, a lot of just placed smaller pieces. They're not full consistence like my sleeves. I would say an artist I always like to talk about is Jeremy Joachim. Again, with names, I'm always unsure, but Jeremy is a co-owner of this shop called Serpent and the Rainbow in Asheville, North Carolina. I met Jeremy when we were 18 and 19 years old, I bought records from him off eBay. And he was, I think, just a counter guy at the time at the tattoo shop. Moved to North Carolina after he did Apprentice, started working in shops, and then opened his own. He's done several pieces on me just throughout the almost 20 years we've been buddies. And he's such a unique tattooer because he's colorblind. And so he tattoos very traditionally, like in red, blacks, and yellows. Anytime he's done color tattoos on me, like he did this big reaper and tiger on the back of my thigh. And, you know, he had to ask advice from another tattooer, be like, hey, what would be a good orange for this tiger? Because I don't know.
And so, it just looks blah to me. Like crazy.
Exactly. Oh. So he has tattooed me, I think he first tattooed me in maybe 2007 or 2008, and last tattooed me, I think it was last year or the summer before. So I've been able to get tattoos from him consistently over 15 plus years and just see how he's grown as an artist. And he personally is just one of my favorite tattooers. I love his style. He likes to keep such a narrow footprint on social media and everything, but I tell everyone about him. He has this small following of cult. People who just love his style. So,
and Ashlyn has a vibrant, thriving tattoo community.
Yes, yes. Serpent and the Rainbow is my favorite shop because of my connection to Jeremy, but also I have a friend named Dean Denny who tattoos out of there, who's incredible. John Henry Glone is another tattooer there that I've been tattooed by. Just some really amazing tattooers there at Serpent in the Rainbow.
Right. And one of our guests, I believe, got theirs done at Zen and Ink. Yeah, it's all vegan ink that they use.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, just a wonderful haven of supportive and thriving tattoo artists and community in Ashland, North Carolina. Thank you so much for sharing that. I am just fascinated by you, Andrew. I love the dichotomy of it all, right? You're focused on certain aspects of your sweet pandas, and then you're on the Egyptian plague and the Byzantine, and yet other sweet little sort of sticker tattoos, the broken heart tattoo. You really have a wonderful compilation, which sort of tracks your life, right? Even though not every tattoo is going to have some big tribute meaning to it, but it's going to have a significant passion of what you were looking for and seeking at that time in your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think every tattoo can have meaning. It doesn't have to be a depth, but even that, hey, my good buddy Jeremy put this on me on the night of their grand opening at the shop. That story alone is what's important to me. The art may not have its meaning, but the tattooing process and the significance of that can be the greatness.
Right, and the connection with that artist. And you are so focused representing destigmatizing, you know, for the LGBTQ plus community, but also what kind of steps do you think could be happening to destigmatize the judgments, the filters around tattoos? Because we have a millennial generation that's got at least 40% of the generation has tattoos. We've got to start getting over this judgment around folks with tattoos. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. I think just social media has been very helpful to expand tattooing as a community and people who get tattoos, to where it's more uncommon to meet someone without tattoos than someone with tattoos. And I think that there's varying levels of acceptance, to where I work predominantly in a lot of healthcare, and you see a lot of doctors and nurses will have tattoos, but it's still people who are older generations may not like that. And, you know, there can be those judgments. So I think just exposure to more and more people to understand that, hey, this is just like wearing different types of apparel. Just because I like to wear all black, and that doesn't make my tattoos any different from a person who likes to have like a single tattoo or just one.
Exactly. Or someone likes to do a lot of sparkling accessories.
Exactly. It's just who we are as people, what we appreciate in art form, and what makes us feel comfortable in our own skin. There's a lot of people who appreciate the tattooing because it helps with our body dysmorphia. And we see more and more folks using this artwork to feel better about who they are and how they feel within their own body.
Excellent, excellent, excellent insights and advice. Oh my gosh, listeners, be sure to follow Your Ink Story on Instagram so you can see the images of Andrew's ink. I'll be doing a reel there, and it's at Tell Me Your Ink Story on Instagram. It's also over on TikTok. I do the same thing there if that's where you're hanging. And it's Your Ink Story Podcast on TikTok. Andrew, thank you so much for sharing your beautiful ink stories with us. I'm so grateful for your inspirational insights about the art of tattoos. I definitely learned a lot from you today, as well as the heart behind your tattoos, how you and why you put those designs on your body and where you put them on your body. You have helped us connect more deeply with each other during this conversation. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Ink Story. Please rate and review this podcast wherever you are tuning in. And if this episode inspired you, please share it so we can all feel more connected through our common humanity and lived experiences. If you or someone you know would like to share a meaningful ink story on the podcast, please send me an email, andy@yourinkstory.com, along with a brief description. Feel free to share your thoughts about this episode via a voicemail message by visiting yourinkstory.com. And when you get to the website, just tap the podcast mic icon located in the lower right-hand corner of the screen and leave your message. Until next time, I'm wishing you a delicious day everywhere you glow. Cheers!